Yeah. Tom says, you know, I think it might snow. I almost washed his mouth out with soap, but then I realized he was telling the truth.
It just popped in my mind. The color was right or something. I hope I'm wrong.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hum, hee, ho. Once more we tarot. That's an old one, eh? Looks like somebody's mama made that one. Oh, yeah. That looks like somebody's mama made it for sure, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's got that feeling.
She was a crocheter and a quilter. Crocheted both ways.
Yes. Well, she was crocheting. And I can just imagine her sitting there and crocheting that. Did they used to have sewing circles and knitting circles and stuff?
Yeah, quilting bees.
Yeah. Always had sewing circles, but not everybody sewed. Some people knit. It was fun hiding behind the couch and listening to them talk, because we didn't have TV, you know. And then they'd catch you there. How long have you been there?
I just got here.
And they always had good cookies, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Sewing circles. A lot of fun sneaking into the room. You had to be fast. When Mom went to open the door for the first lady, you had to scoot in the living room, get behind the couch. It's like the timing was everything. You'd get caught real easy. And it wasn't a good idea to take one of your sisters, because somebody would always giggle or pinch somebody or something. You know how it is. Sisters. The amusement of it all. So are you enjoying this tarot stuff?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I have a message from Karen Russell.
Mm-hmm.
She asked me to tell you that she would hope that you would look at your neighbors for the reality of their lives. Whoever your neighbor is at any time. Don't see them as part of your life, but try to see them as whatever is real in their life. That's what she asked me to tell you. So I told ya. And she's doing pretty good. Some of you know Karen. I think you all know Karen, because she and Rob were here with the telescopes, do you remember? Mm-hmm. With Terry and Mala. Were you here with the telescopes?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you were. Were you?
I wasn't.
And you weren't either, right? You and Bob were off somewhere, weren't you?
I think I was down.
You were
furry doing the retreat.
No, you were in Saskatchewan. I think you guys went to Saskatchewan.
Oh, okay.
Watch his grass grow.
You just forget you go anywhere else, because it's so much fun in Didsbury. I understand that. We all feel that way. Well, some of us all feel that way about Didsbury sometimes, depending on the day. And she has a disease called Lyme, and the disease is a very interesting one, because the gene that is responsible for stopping the growth of cells, particularly cells that have to do with things like lymph and lungs and things like that. For most of us, it shuts off, the gene shuts off growth, so your lungs don't just keep growing. You notice that when your lungs filled their lung cavity, they didn't start coming out of your ears or other orifices, they just stopped growing. But for some people who have Lyme, of which there are apparently 500 in North America, that gene isn't working. So what happens is these cells start growing, and if it's in the lungs, they create a bubble, and then at some point, because they don't have any really function, they're just cells, they're not really functioning for anything, they collapse, and then the lung collapses. So she's had her left lung partially collapsed a little over a year ago, and they got it back up, and then her right lung partially collapsed a couple of months ago. And so there was real problems with it healing, so she got moved to Toronto General Hospital. And they put another tube in. She had one tube that's a suction, they're like trying to get the lung to adhere, get it blown back up, and then try to get it to adhere. And it wasn't working, and so they transferred it to this other hospital, and the lung, they put in another tube, and then they took out, loosened one tube, and then they took out a tube, and it seems like the lung is starting to heal the hole in it that caused it to collapse from the little bubble of lung cells breaking. So she's doing much better at the moment. There's optimism. But because it's Lam, not too much, you know, a reasonable optimism is what's going on right now. And she's just really very aware of how hard it is to see people in the hospital. You see people because you don't know anything. Like your neighbor, you're talking to your neighbor and you're trading recipes and they could be dead in 3 hours or something, you know. Or anybody you're talking to. Mm-hmm. So they're very aware of saying, you know, like, I said, so you want me to tell everybody anything? She thought about it and she says, yeah, ask people to really see their neighbors. So for Karen, that would be the biggest prayer you could offer. Sometime within the next couple of days, practice seeing your neighbors, whoever they are, on a bus or actual neighborhood or whatever, and then wish her well. That would be a nice blessing for her. That would give her a lot of energy. Okay? Mm-hmm. A good wish, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So we get to do the lovers.
The lovers.
You noticed that because I stuck a couple of them out there. And I'm sort of divided about how to go with this, so I wanted to read. I have notes from various classes that Rinpoche did on the tarot. You know, what's his name? It was George Dawson did. You may have heard of him. Because it was a Western mystery, so he wasn't Rinpoche, he was Orananda Bodhi, he was George Dawson. Well, he was Leslie Dawson for a while, and then he was George Dawson.
Leslie?
Uh-huh. Yeah. And, so I thought, I was, you know, I read them all every time, and it seems to me, I've gone through all the notes and plus other ones from when we did mystery gatherings where we explored the tarot, and we did costumes and enacted each card, and I have notes from that too, but they're much more enigmatic, you know, for introducing the cards. But I thought tonight we might start with this book, with the lovers, and go through bits of it, and then I'll just read some of the notes from, because there's particularly good notes from Dawson's talking about the tarot. What you mean, Dawson, you know? Mm-hmm. Does that sound like a deal?
Mm-hmm.
So the lovers is... Where's your nice colored copy there, man? Yeah, like, oh, they're both the same, aren't they? Can I see that one? Yeah. Nicely colored. Nice? Basically the same, you can see. And in some cards you can see more kind of light coming from the palms of the angel. And there are these three figures, and two of the figures have pillars behind them, and one of the figures has the spirit sun, the soul, the sun of your being, the center of your being, the light of your being, is compared to the sun. So these would be the three, what makes a lover is when the super consciousness and the subconsciousness and the consciousness are operating in their proper play together. If this consciousness, the ordinary consciousness, the intellectual consciousness, is looking out rather than at the subconsciousness, you don't get harmony. What you get is a bunch of intellectual things about what's right or wrong, and there's always emotion that you can't tolerate in your being. Does that make sense? And when that's happening at some time or other, that's going to come pushing out, and you're going to be caught in a storm of emotion. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And you learn how to go in and work with the emotion, which is very sensual, then you find that the emotion is the richness that brings you to a dialogue of the three together. Is that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
So these three cards are your own being. These three figures in this card are your own being. All of us, whoever we are, have Adam and Eve and the angel of blessing within us. Whatever our circumstance, all beings have these three. Nice to know, I think. No one is exempt from that. From this point of view, there are no victims. Interesting, huh? So, the whole meaning of the Kabbalah is contained in beauty. Beauty is in the tree of life, which there should be one up here somewhere. I know there's one in the other book. I should just figure out where all these are before the class so I don't have to flip through them every time.
There's one.
Yeah. So this is from the, yeah, thank you. Same.
Oh,
you got, if you have this book, it's on page whatever, preface, on page resources, at the back, after page 223, it's on page 224. So do you have a copy? You can show this between you and Heather, and everybody, you can all look at this. The tree of life is basically the diagram of creation. What is interesting about the tree of life is that there are four levels of creation. And you see the tree repeated at a certain point. The point of beauty is the link to the next level as well. It becomes the point that links you. In the lower tree of life, the center point of beauty links you to the next level, and that links you to the next level. So just like in the Tibetan tradition, there are four levels, the three bodies, and then the three together is the fourth. Do you remember that? Do you know that in Buddhism? There's awareness of the body, right?
Mm-hmm.
Awareness of feeling, right? Emotion,
mm-hmm.
Like and dislike in particular, right? Awareness of mental states, which are not the same thing as emotion. They seem like it to us, but they're not. When there's a certain mental state, you tend to blow this way. A certain mental state. When you can be aware of the mental states, then you don't blow anywhere. You can say, oh, here's anger. Oh, here's jealousy. Oh, here's joy. Oh, here's grief. Oh, here's inferiority. Oh, here's superiority. And you just watch them, but you don't have to blow with them, right? They're actually mental states. The extreme like and dislike or pleasure and pain are more the emotions or feeling from a Buddhist point of view. So the first one is body, awareness of body. Second is awareness of feeling. Next is awareness of mind states, right? And then once you have the awareness of those three, then comes the fourth. Awareness of mind objects. Awareness of how you can steer. If you put your mind on this object, all of them work this way. If you put your mind on this object, all of them. If you put your mind on kindness, everything starts, everybody looks so much nicer. Have you noticed that? So curious. I don't know what they do every time. Every time I do a retreat, everybody is so much nicer when I come on a retreat. So curious. I don't know what you guys do when I do it. You know what I'm saying? When you decide that somebody's out to get you, it's amazing how many people are just assholes. Just pure assholes. Isn't that true? In driving. Like people you don't even know. They're going too fast or too slow or, right? You've all noticed this, I'm sure. So this is like when you have awareness that where you put your mind, then the winds start blowing you more in that direction. That is, and then you find the physical reflects that, and the emotional reflects that, and the mind states, it goes round and round. Then you know how to steer. So there's the three bodies, and then a fourth when you understand how the three work together. So also in the Kabbalah, there are this tree of life extends to four levels. And beauty is the point that joins one to the other. This card of the lovers is the essence of beauty. Because it is union of opposites. Which can only happen if you're willing to see something beautiful in otherness. Isn't that true? You don't become the same as the other, but the doorway opens. And that energy flow is called beauty. Is that pretty straightforward?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what this card is all about. The whole meaning of the Kabbalah is contained in beauty. Of all the tarot cards, the lovers most closely represents beauty as the central sephirah on the tree of life. So you see the tree of life and you understand. Each of those points is called a sephirah. S-E-P-H-I-R-A-T-H. No, A-H. S-E-P-H-I-R-A-H. Sephirah. On the tree of life. When two lovers are apart, nothing happens. Together, they create beauty. A flower and an eye do nothing apart, but put them together and beauty happens. Beauty is very subtle. That's why this key is connected with discrimination, which refines the senses. The whole point of discrimination is refining the senses, not judgment. Look, is that a tulip? Well, it seems to have the same kind of stem as a tulip, but it's got more of a... I wonder, have you ever seen a tulip? I don't know. It kind of looks like... What's that other bulb flower that... Oh, no, not an iris. See, that's discrimination, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
There's no judgment. There is no judgment in it. You don't take that extra leap and think, therefore, this one is better than that one.
Mm-hmm.
You don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Discrimination is discrimination. So therefore, you can see beauty. And the more you refine the discrimination, the more you appreciate beauty. Just the beauty of a tulip versus a lilac. Same color sometimes, different perfume. Is that clear? So discrimination refines the senses. We gradually discover we're missing a lot if we're sensitive only to the gross level. So at the point of beauty, we get into finer and finer awarenesses. awareness of feeling and discriminating. Well, do I want to feel good or feel bad about this? What about if I feel neutral? And choosing that. Okay? The angel of superconsciousness is blessing the lovers who represent the self-conscious and subconscious within each of us. We usually identify with one side or the other, emphasizing either reason or feeling. Integration is the blessing. Communication is the beauty. It is said in the Kabbalah that the whole universe, the whole tree of life, is constructed from the tension that exists between polarities. This tension is total, not partial. As in breathing, there's an in-breath and an out-breath, and you've got to have both. And this card is also very much linked to Hatha Yoga and Kundalini, which is where using the opposites to raise the energy. Each person is the entire picture seen in Key 6. So the Hierophant was, if you remember, the Hierophant was the still small voice inside that is always calling you to come home. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. The Hierophant, do you remember that? That still voice that you have to listen very deeply to hear? Vaguely? Yeah? Mm-hmm. Okay. So this one, the Hierophant was the nail, right? The connector, the still voice that connects us to transcendence, the Hierophant. This one is the sword. In a way, they're very different. They have a very different function. The Hierophant is the statement of union. This is the way, the whispering statement of union inside your being. This one, it's the message of that. Go this way, go that way. And the message is essentially based on desire. You might say that Key 6 is the message that the Hierophant has to give in order for us to arrive at the next stage. So the lovers is the message of the voice of the Hierophant that comes to fruition in the next key 7, which is the chariot. We're supposed to pay serious attention to the message coming from the higher self. And it comes through the agency of the subconscious. You notice the message comes through the female figure, which is the subconscious, which has this tree behind it with 5 fruits on it. Right? You see that tree behind it, the 5 fruits? Representing the 5 senses, which are like fires, actually. They're like these energy vibration things. If you've ever experienced that in meditation, where you can feel your eyes eating things, bringing things in and burning with the energy of it, and your ears. There are different levels of fire. So this is the receptive to feeling and sensing, the sensual, and it keeps a memory of all of the experiences. And this is the namer, the one who is intellectual about it, who thinks about it, the male. And the thing that's interesting is that they're both equally blessed by the superconsciousness. So to have one ruling over the other won't work. They have to be lovers, although they're opposites. But opposites make the best lovers, don't they?
Okay.
the ones who do something better than you, and you do something better than them, huh? So there's this clicking together, huh? The ones who rub you the wrong way so you move, rub you the right way so you're happy you moved. We are supposed to pay serious attention to the message coming from the higher self through the agency of our subconscious. Because if you look at the card, you notice that he is looking at her, and who's she looking at?
Higher consciousness.
Yeah. You don't have a picture there? Okay. So you can see what's going on there, right? He's looking at her, and she's looking at the higher consciousness. He doesn't get the higher consciousness unless he's using the sensual. You can think about something all you like, but it's the experience that makes the difference, not the thought. Being in the body is what makes the difference, not thinking about whether you should be in the body. Is that true? As soon as you feel yourself in the body, things shift, don't they? You can tell when you're not in the body because you always got the answer. When you're in the body, you don't have so many answers, do you? Mm-hmm. You just get things done quite happily. There's not as much confusion about it, is there? How sweet is that? We are supposed to pay serious attention to the message coming from the higher self through the agency of our subconscious. This is definitely the most salient feature of this key, and it should never be forgotten. It is from the subconscious aspect of ourselves, as pictured by the woman in Key 6, that we receive the necessary inspiration to deal with our daily struggle. The struggle, of course, is something we're all familiar with. It's the effort toward liberation from everything that holds us back from our destiny. Our true destiny is to learn to represent the highest aspect of our own selves, not of somebody else. The woman who looks to the angel in this key shows us that the subconscious is in touch with our higher aspect. The connection between womanhood and receptivity is obvious. It's a matter of common instruction in the books of the wise that you and I, as self-conscious beings, should direct our attention to our subconscious. Thus the man looks at the woman in Key 6. He is on the rajasic, passionate side of the arrangement. His other half represents the gratification of his fiery desire. According to the Kabbalists, the root of all desire, the root of all desire is the hunger to experience the capital S self. Or in Buddhism, all desire leads to enlightenment. It's just a matter of how long it takes, or whether you want to join in the process. Mm. How much you want to fight. The means of fulfillment is through the female. The angel is the root that divides itself into two branches, the self-imparting, or male, and the receptive, or female. The principle of polarity emanates from the principle of unity. And the three supernals are synthesized in love. So this card is called the Lovers. Because eventually, whatever little dramas the love affair goes to, it's always going to end in, and they lived happily ever after. Always. There is no other answer. That's the end of all fairy tales. And it's all a fairy tale. Key 6 is disposing intelligence. meaning that it places things apart for the purpose of analysis, right? Or discriminating intelligence, whatever you want to call it. In the beginning, the quest for yourself seems like a bottomless pit, but we can make great strides with a little help from our capitalistic friends, because there's this kind of material available, or various teachings available, or, you know, people who have a greater wisdom are available. It's true, isn't it? It always falls into your life from somewhere, doesn't it? In the last analysis, you and I have to make our own choices. That's what it means to be mature. If we could make intelligent choices with some background like this to work from, we're on our way to success. In occult circles, the story is that at one time there were not two sexes, there was just one being. Then it was considered entertaining to divide us into masculine and feminine. It is entertaining, and for writers and movie producers, it's been a gold mine. It's hard to write an interesting novel about, let's say, a yeast cell. Life is always trying to entertain itself, and it goes to great extremes in order to do so. It's the view of many thinkers all over the world that the most ghastly fate of all is boredom. If you imagine God as a great big happy blob existing all by itself in the universe, you can see how dull that would be. You can understand why the divine being might say, hey, let's create merry-go-rounds and loop the loops and let's get the whole thing rolling. From a dramatic point of view, it makes sense. The polarity you see in the lovers generates all sort of fascinating experiences. For instance, you and me. And then someone talks about the biblical Garden of Eden. It says they say it wasn't so much fun, they got into trouble. And it brings up a very nice point about the lover's card, about the snake and the desire, because you can see the snake on the tree behind her. We've all been subjected to the story of Adam and Eve, as you might expect from the Kabbalists. The real story is exactly the reverse. Adam didn't have a fall. He had an uplifting experience that introduced him into the spiritual world through the agency of his feminine aspect. This is a far cry from the ordinary myth with which we are so familiar. The apples were delicious and enjoyed by all. And far from being a dreadful creature who was the embodiment of Satan, the serpent represents the power in ourselves that is our very salvation. The desire is our salvation. It's how we're using it. When they were using it, listening to the inner and guiding it with discrimination, or not, that's the whole point. The angel indicates that the relationship between the sexes is being blessed from on high. Anything else is heretical as far as this teaching is concerned. Does the Kabbalah believe in original sin, someone asks. The Kabbalah doesn't believe in sin at all. There is such a thing as missing the mark, but we always get another chance. It's not like a game on the fair where you only get three tries and then you lose your money. you get as many tries as you want. There's no end, and you can choose, and you only actually need one try, the one that works. And the others are teaching you how to do that one. All the others are just like practicing to get that one. When you hit the note right, you hit it right. Is that true? Mm-hmm. All the other ones are just practicing, and then when that one note sounds right, it's like, isn't that right? Just streams through your being, doesn't it? When you can just see how the whole thing just comes together and it's all just singing right, it's like, and there's joy, isn't it? Isn't it? No? Mm-hmm. Yeah? I thought I'd hear a couple of amens out of that one. So he goes into a whole thing about why this philosophy differs from other religion. and where sin, where sex is sin and desire are evil. Tarot and Kabbalah say that if you didn't have access to desire and sex, life wouldn't be worth living. You must have both intelligence and sensation in your life to make it successful. They are equally important. And isn't that true? Without having the emotion, being in touch with the emotion that creates the intellectual stories, you're blind, aren't you? When you can open yourself to feel the emotion, to see the emotion, you're not caught anymore trying to keep away from it or be afraid of it or get something right to be safe from it. Isn't that true? Is that true or not?
Mm-hmm.
And once you can do that, then you know how to be centered regardless of what is happening. Is that getting louder or is that my magic?
No, it's getting louder.
Huh?
It needs to be turned up.
Would you turn that higher for us? Thank you.
Oh.
It was starting to really sing. Thank you. Does this make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You're not sure?
No.
Why aren't you sure?
I'm not sure I understand the difference.
Between what and what?
The
intellect and sensation?
Yeah. Or how they work together.
You can think about something and think you know what it is, can't you? Have you ever done that?
Oh, is that a yes?
Or a no?
Yeah.
But, you know, I used to ask people, I don't know if I ever did it in Edmonton, probably. I usually do all my tricks everywhere. I used to ask people to get a glass of really cold water on a hot summer day and put it in front of them and then sit and look at it for a while and then imagine reaching out and slowly taking a sip and feeling it in their mouth and then swallowing it. And then I would get them to do it, paying attention. Do you think there's a difference between those two?
Yeah, it's just that with an apple. And I can visualize tasting the apple, so the difference for me is really small.
I know it's really small, but that doesn't mean it isn't there. That does not mean it isn't there.
Right.
There is a difference. Isn't there?
Yeah.
So if you start to rely on your idea of what something is, it's easy to miss the subtle differences in what is actually being presented. Isn't that true? Because all apples do not taste the same, do they?
No.
But when you're remembering an apple, you're remembering all of the apples you've tasted as one experience, not a specific apple that you're tasting. Is that true?
Yes.
So I totally believe that you could imagine tasting the apple because your intellect is profoundly well-developed and beautiful. Whether you trust your senses as much as you have developed this beautiful power of discrimination, that's a moot point between thee and me. We could discuss it.
Mm-hmm.
And whether your intellect has the taste of the apple and then goes and says, well, what's different, and finds it interesting to describe the difference, I'm not so sure about.
Between mentally imagining it and tasting it.
Yeah. It's probably more interesting for you to know that you could imagine it and almost taste it than it is for you to imagine it and not quite taste it.
Could you say that again?
It's probably more interesting for you to think that you could imagine it and almost taste it. That's one.
Yeah.
Got it?
Yeah.
Got that one? Than to imagine it and not quite taste it.
Oh.
It's more interesting to you to see that the intellect can basically taste an apple than it is to see where it isn't tasting.
Mm-hmm.
That's more interesting to you to see that it tastes it. Right?
Okay.
So it's more interesting for you to not pay attention mm-hmm. to the differences.
Uh-huh.
Is that true?
Probably.
I can see that. You can see that. You know that.
Okay.
You know what your strengths are. I'm not. It's not a condemnation. We all have. It's not a judgment. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So when you know that about yourself, then it's kind of fun to kind of say, well, I wonder what the senses do from an intellectual point of view. And use your intellect to start exploring them more rather than going only on the intellect. That's an intellectually wise thing to do, isn't it?
Sounds like it.
I think so. And that's what that would become the lover's card.
Is to pay more attention to what the body is actually experiencing.
The sensual. Very often we don't like paying attention to the sensual if we trust the intellect more. We don't mind going unconscious in the sensual, you know, stuffing our senses, but not consciously. Which is interesting, isn't it? A couple of you have heard this from me in a lot of different languages.
So how do you consciously be sensual?
Well, you're sensual already. All you just got to do is be conscious of the being. You know, not of the thought of being.
How?
I don't think you'd like me if I showed you right now. Well, I don't think you'd like me that either. I think, you know, you're way too skittish for me to answer that question.
Oh. No, go for it. You missed.
Heather knows this one really well. You're not aiming at anybody, for Christ's sake. One drop is not going to kill you, you bitch. Oh, I'm not true. That I aimed. What did you feel in all that? Did you feel your body? Now you're dying it down. Now you're doing an intellectual thing. But did you? Can you feel your body still? Can you feel your heartbeat?
Yes.
Is that so hard to admit? Can I like keep that?
Oh!
That's what hit you in the eye. I was aiming for the bridge of your nose, but you turned your head a little bit and got you in the eye.
Yeah, I
know.
Thank you.
So all of that just cut through the thought for a moment, didn't it? I mean, the first one is kind of funny,
yeah.
But then I kept doing it. I was like, are you looking at the door? And, you know? But then you're in your body. Aren't you?
Well, I really watched myself go, what am I supposed to do now?
Yeah, and then I kept throwing things. And then what? There was a moment where you were actually looking at me, right? And just seeing I was going to throw something else, right? Did you see that moment?
I had a moment of black.
Black?
Like a flash, only it was black. Like everything stopped for a second.
Yeah, thank you. But it's not exactly black. It's like no thought, just frozen. No continuum. Was it actually black? You could still see, but it was frozen. Almost frozen.
It was like I could see that there was a slash of black. No, that's thinking about it.
Okay, but there was just this moment where there wasn't a before or after.
Yes.
That's right. That's just pure perception awareness. And what you want to do is teach yourself that that's always there somewhere, but we're always clouding it over with our story, so to keep us safe. But sometimes our story doesn't allow us to catch the subtleties of the moment, so we can't see when the jar of water is coming at us. It could come from anywhere. So how to get a balance between the senses, with the intellect bringing the intelligence of naming and knowing and guiding, but not trying to overrule or cut off whatever is coming from the senses. If they're balanced together, it works. How you doing?
Well, I want that, but you have to keep your teeth in your mouth. So how do I?
Oh, I don't. Do I? That's what I'm doing. Ask several people.
Yes.
No, I'm outrageous. Can I have my cushion back? Thank you for the books.
My cushion?
I don't know. I threw it. Oh, it's on the shrine. Thank you. First of all, you have to be aware that your intellect tends to override. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
You have to be aware of that first. And then you have to be curious. Because your intellect follows curiosity, doesn't it? Whenever you want to know something, your intellect starts going at it, doesn't it? Well, what would it be like to get a sense experience first and then the intellectual image? Is that possible? And you play with that idea when you're brushing your teeth, when you're walking, you know, for 3 to 4 days. And it'll start happening. You have to want it.
You try to experience it.
Now you say, what would it be like to have a sensation before a thought?
Okay.
It's an interesting idea. So that every once in a while, you get to have an experience as if you were 4 months old, without a name already set up for it. So who knows what things about experiences that our names stop us from seeing? Who knows how we keep robbing ourselves in our lives of the richness of everything that's all around us? And that is the whole essence of the lovers. He is not looking at the great answer. He's looking at the senses, which are, they're the desire of the snake. The desire of the senses is the true guide to at one moment, to love, full on love. Awareness of the body is the key. There is no other key. I don't care how gifted you are in how many ways, what a great intellect you have, or how many angels come and tell you, that whisper you the secrets of the universe every night, or any of that stuff. What an incredible cook you are, or how you're the greatest brain mathematician in the entire universe, or, you know, that you were given a Stradivarius to play because, you know, or whatever. None of that is a blink. But being able to feel the desire of your being as it comes out your senses in the present moment and transforms the world into something you can name is the key to glory, because your names are glory. If you're not using them to keep yourself in a safe place, we're not safe. So that's the lovers. Is that pretty straightforward?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I can see several things just come to mind right away when you say that, is that like a stage hypnotist, for example, can convince somebody that they're the water is tomato soup or whatever.
Absolutely.
The intellect has decided it's tomato soup. So you could be having a delicious meal, but not tasting one mouthful of it, but rather just totally being intellectual about it.
And in fact, it's very interesting that if you, one of the things about teaching yourself to practice awareness with eating, is you find out after 3 bites, it's very hard to be aware of the 4th bite. We usually watch the first 3 bites. Sometimes just to make sure it's what we wanted it to be, rather than to see what it is. But after the 4th bite, it's funny how hard it is to actually taste it as if you were tasting it for the first time. And every bite is slightly different, like a...
Why would it be the 4th bite?
Because I don't know. You know, you check it out and let me know.
So with the senses, so would it be helpful then if you have an apple to, you know, take some of the, you know, suck some of the juice out to feel the senses more, or to be outside and feel the wind on your face?
Like it'd be fun to play with that, you know. Mm-hmm. You knew I was going to say that, didn't you? But that's a lovely way to play, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And see if that changes the way you walk down the street. You never know. Is it at least something worth thinking about?
Mm-hmm. Except I'm thinking. It's hard.
Well, for some people it's way harder, Bonnie, than it really is. And it isn't that there isn't reason for that. It's just that they got a bigger joy coming.
Hmm. Okay.
Well, exactly. Because, you know, what it says in this book is true. We all want fulfillment. We all want to fulfill the best in ourselves. It's all right, all very nice and good if somebody else thinks we've done well and we can do okay for a while with that, but after a while we get that itchy feeling inside, like something's missing. And it is true, that snake is desire. And that snake that says to, somewhere in this book, he talks about that even more, that snake is saying to Eve, man, these apples are good. And Eve is taking one of the apples. And she has a bite, and she says, yeah, they're good. And then Adam says, what have you got there? And she said, oh, I got this apple. That snake told me they were really good. He says, well, let me try one. She doesn't say, you should try one. She's not the tempter. The intellect, by its own interest, will take you where you want to go. The habit of not being interested is something you can be curious about, which already the intellect is involved. Why aren't I interested in going there? Pretty soon you're thinking about it. When you think about something, pretty soon you believe it. When you believe it, you start going there. Oh, I just like to tell Cecily I don't like feeling my body because, well, let me feel it and see whether that's true. I know she'll probably throw the lamp at me next time. If I don't know what it is. I'll bring my mitt, my baseball mitt, with me to next class. And I'll So there was something else in here I wanted to... Oh yeah, the tree of life behind the man has got 12 fruits on it. Some people talk about, where is he? Some people talk about that as the 12 signs of the zodiac, 12 flames, and they're three flamed. So sometimes they talk about the cardinal, fixed, immutable parts of the 12 signs of the zodiac. So there's like 36 different life expressions, it's called. Or the 36 different ways that of the uniqueness of an intellect. of the ability to discriminate. And behind the woman is this, with the snake, which is desire, are the five fruits, which are the five senses.
So the 36 life expressions are how to discriminate? Is that right?
Well, the two together create discrimination, but it's more...
So the 12 fruits and the 36 life expressions create discrimination?
How these operate together create discrimination. Mm-hmm. Because when you actually use the intellect to explore the sensual, there's no judgment.
Mm-hmm.
There's only differences. Mm-hmm. When you use the intellect devoid of being involved with the sensual, you got all these blanket statements, this is right, this is wrong, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they're like, and there's a sense of I with them. Isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than an experience, on a windy day it was like this, but on a sunny day, you know? Not that flowing kind of sensual discrimination.
So discrimination then isn't negative, it's more opening or something, more curious.
It's naming. It's hard because the word doesn't really, you know, like sometimes people use discrimination more like I think the word judgment should be used.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe sometimes discrimination can be tinged with judgment. But when you think of it as the scintillating intelligence of discrimination, it's more
mm-hmm.
that ability to see the different threads of color in that beautiful shawl, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like you could say it's all sort of orangey red, but really the flows of the different energy with the light, and you know, which one is the orangey red, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So discrimination is the refinement of naming, which is how you get clearer and clearer to the source of your being. Which is what the desire is urging you to find. How to be your own full being. Complete at one-ment within your own being. Not separate from anything outside. They call it at one moment, don't they? Lovers. Through our senses, we can cultivate the remarkable joy of which we are capable. As mentioned in the Bible, life is a feast to which we are invited. Enjoyment of the feast takes skill like everything else. This skill is considered worth achieving. The enjoyer of the feast is ourselves, our innermost, truest self. Where I live in Marin County, it's always cloudy on summer mornings. So I remind myself that the sun is shining brightly up above the clouds. Clouds are made of water, therefore in the tarot they represent the world of matter, the world of appearance that obscures the true self. That's what has to be overcome. The total illusion of everything that's going on. The illusion, being able to use the illusion rather than assume it's what's going on. The illusion is my mind's memory of something. It's very beautiful, but it's not the same. One is there, they work together. That one needs to always be given a new taste, a new feast. So if I start depending on that, unattached from the senses, I lose my intelligence. you cling to your intelligence, you lose your intelligence. Mm-hmm. That's what happens. If you find the right answer, you know that in this world. Have any of you ever done a week retreat or a 3-week retreat or anything like that? Any of you?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, after the end of the 3 weeks, when you came out, was there a new fashion or a new word or a new news story you hadn't heard about?
Mm-hmm.
How fast. Mm-hmm. But if you were living through it every day, you would have got it right away in the next one. And you would have always been right every day, but you wouldn't have noticed how that was continuously adapting based on sensual experience, right? You do a 6-month retreat, the whole world can change. You do a 3-year retreat, I don't know, but I'd like to find out. 5 months, 6 months. So what is this intellect that has the right answer? When you can disappear, you know, and just go and do some really nice stuff and come back 3 weeks later and not know what somebody's talking about when they're like a person that you could talk to quite easily, you know, 3 weeks ago. Hmm? It's a ghost. It's an image. It's an illusion. The reality that you think you know. It's continuously at night all the workers come in and put up new advertising policies, so the next morning as you wake up you start remembering them, so you know what's going on. Right? Little headlines and Fox News. When you begin to look at it, the total illusion, that's what has to be overcome, the total illusion of everything that's going on. The total illusion about everything that's going on. When you begin to look at it differently, to see inwardly rather, see what's going on inwardly by your senses rather than outwardly by facts and data and the story that's being told. Then you are on your way to getting rid of the cloud of intervening substance that keeps you from seeing the sun, keeps you from seeing the true spirit of your being. Nothing stands between us and illumination except this great big hunk of entertainment. Because it's like, you know, in intellect you always have to hear the latest news or, you know. Really nice aging. You know, you have less and less interest in being there on open night. You wait, and if you really want to know, you get the reviews. You don't necessarily believe them, then pretty soon you rent the video. Way more fun. There's nothing wrong with the entertainment in itself, but we shouldn't confuse it with reality. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with the entertainment. It's just not reality. It's entertainment. Mm-hmm. Or a shield, or whatever you want to call it. You and I are trying to poke through the facade and get to what's important. It's not far away, honest. The real is very close. But people have well-organized ideas about everything, such as some things are holy and some things are the work of the devil, and that's the way it is. In the meantime, the sun and the moon and the stars are quietly shining. It's a comfortable feeling to know that something is not being elected every 4 years. And isn't that a nice summation?
It sure is.
It's comforting. And so, when you actually start to have a sense of love for yourself, rather than thinking some things about yourself aren't acceptable, when you actually trust the emotions that come up, but don't lose your center in being just the observer and knowing how to be centered in whatever is present, right? Then Where is that part? Our emotions are the most challenging part of our composition, which is why you'll find this one of the most exciting fields for investigating in yourself. You need a steady hand at the wheel when you get into this kind of journey, because the emotions are, by their very nature, rough waters and difficult to handle. So the ruler must rule, that is to say, the one that wants to see for oneself, doesn't just buy into the emotional story, but watches the emotion, sees it, doesn't dislike it, isn't swayed by it. Do you understand that? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Does that sound like mindfulness?
Mm-hmm.
In practical psychology, the passions rule humanity. This is humanity's undoing. Jung prophesied, oh yeah, I don't want to go there. The lover's key beautifully represents the peace that is possible in the psyche. Human beings actually have an instinct to work in harmony with the universe. It's built into us, the inner universe and the outer universe. If you just persist with just interest in who you are when you're not in charge, and are interested, the harmony and the joy and the ability to be an intellect totally involved with sensuality is profoundly beautiful. Being able to do something in a nice, clear, intellectual way and feel the joy of doing it together is very restful. The lovers. Anything. Even something that you don't like because you've gone past that emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Is that clear?
Mm-hmm.
So the whole thing of the lovers is actually the love, which when it's really, really a total experience, becomes bliss. And its most profound and useful experience is just a sense of kindness, interest, kindness. Just interest in who you are when you're not home. Because that's the most profound experience of the lovers that you need to develop. So that's this part, and I just have about 15 minutes left. So discriminating knowledge more and more refines creative imagining.
Say that again?
Discriminating knowledge
mm-hmm.
more and more refines creative imagining. So when the creative imagining is sort of the sensual desire, push, wish, sense of there's something to try for, and then the intellect is refining it into discrimination, that's how the meeting point between sensuality and intellect, isn't it? That's the lovers. They don't try to become one another or, you know, but they work together, their best qualities with each other. Because the sensual without intelligence doesn't have any direction, right? What's different in that, then that story about, you know, in the Tibetan about the monster that lives under the ocean that is so hungry. Do you remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? No?
No?
There's this monster that lives under the ocean and he's like so hungry and he's like kind of dumb. So all he does is whatever comes near him, he eats. So if you're traveling on the ocean on your boat, and you want to know how to get past that ocean, this is how you do it. You have with you a conch shell and a bird. When you start getting into territory where there's no life forms, you haven't seen a fish, you haven't seen a bird, you haven't, maybe you're in monster territory, you let the bird go. If the bird doesn't come back really fast, throw that conch shell over. You know what'll happen? Do you know what'll happen?
Mm-mm.
That monster will eat that conch shell. And it sticks in his throat. He can't swallow it, and he can't cough it up. So you gotta save passage.
Mm-hmm.
You know why he does that? Why that happens? Because the conch shell lives in the same place that the monster lives. But he takes the same environment, and then rather than using it for endless hunger, he creates a refuge out of it. So it stops the hunger. Refuge stops the hunger. What is the refuge for endless sensuality? Coming up close to it and saying, no, was that really good? Which one was better, this one or this one? Right? And endlessly repeating the same emotional pattern. Is that refuge?
Mm-mm.
Or do you come along sometime and say, well, which felt better, this one or this one? Right? Use your intellect to be involved with your senses. Not with getting a right answer and then imposing it. That make sense? It doesn't? Somebody else want to explain it? Did that make sense to you?
Yes.
Would you explain it?
Well, to me this constantly repetitive sensual actions, just like an addiction, and it's habitual, and you're not tasting the food anymore, but it's what you always do. And you're probably addicted to the pheromones that your body produces or the endorphins, but you're not really engaged at all. And as soon as you bring the curiosity of discrimination, well, curiosity is discrimination. So now you're intellectually and actively engaged in the inquiry. It's a whole other thing. It's not even the same thing. It's totally changed.
The desire is still there, but it's shaped totally differently.
Yeah, it isn't,
and you're actually,
it isn't the same.
It's not blind anymore. One second. You explained it much better than me. Thank you. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I misunderstood your question. Maybe I understood that.
Oh. I misunderstood your misunderstanding.
No.
Please, excuse me.
Yeah. I thought you that behavior, whether that made sense, and it didn't. You know, the question made sense.
Okay. Sorry. Okay. So the whole thing about discriminating knowledge, refining creative imagination, saying basically these two work together and that creates a clearer and clearer enrichment of your being, which is what he said in the other book too. And then he talked a little bit several years ago about in doing Tibetan initiations, or it could also be talking about the mandala offering, if some of you are doing that in the Tibetan. You take a mound of rice, an offering to the guru or to the higher of your own being, which is then scattered like the seeds of that spreading everywhere throughhat your life, throughout your whole environment. So the richness of your aspiration, like seeds spreading everywhere. This gathered together in a moment, all the small happenings are heaped up and offered. None are bound together, but brought together. Brought together, not stuck together, or, you know, like, but to gather all of the moments of your experience and use your intellect to name it and then offer it to a higher purpose, This is how the intellect and the senses work together. We are a mandala offering of all of the moments of every grain of consciousness. Right? And the female is the temptress, the seductive, the power of desire, the sensual in your being, the receptive part of your being. True? It's what is always open to another experience. But how you choose which experiences are actually taking you to fulfillment, that's the male part of your being, the namer. So we've gone over that, but is it interesting to you to hear it different ways?
Mm-hmm.
No matter what one does, one is working toward the transcendent. All desire leads to awakening. What you want to do is be more clear about it. Take less time for the benefit of all beings. That's more fun to be generous. It's not, well, for the benefit of all beings, I take on all your suffering and I'll give you all my joy. It's like, wow. What if I could just... Oh, yeah. You know, when you give somebody a gift that they really love, how much joy you get from that? Huh? You do know that, don't you? Yeah, exactly. What's intellectual about that? That's pure sensuality, isn't it? Huh?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's another. And to be able to name things, to be able to name an emotion, that was the part I was looking for. Every moment of consciousness and every moment from the very new beginning is stored in the cells, in the memory, in the cellular memory, in the DNA, right? So every moment has potential of what you are offering and also what you already know that you can start from at this moment to go higher. Repeating patterns is not the lover. The lover is new in every moment. There's an infinite grains continuously open as an offering. The slightest little difference in the DNA and there's a whole different being. So the whole thing about how the male aspect of this, the knower, how the knower tends to look out and give an answer rather than look in and ask a question. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So like teaching the lovers to work properly is like for the male to look in with interest. So name what you know and then see what you don't know. Like, for example, if you're going to do it with emotion, you're sitting and you feel grief or anger or joy, you say, oh, this is grief. And how does it start in the body? If you've never noticed that before. Does that make sense? You bring yourself into the present experience without losing that ability to be present. That's the lovers. That is also a fairly accurate description of samatha meditation. Samatha meditation is teaching yourself to be present regardless of what is playing. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it's calm. It's calm because that's the end result of it. When it's calm, there is a sense of beauty and love. There is kindness. When there is kindness and that sense of beauty, there is the movement to the higher body. Hence the lovers, the three figures. This is how transcendence happens. When the male is not giving out laws, but involved in seeing with interest. Based on the DNA, all of the experience that had already happened, a clarity in how he's looking, a refined discrimination in who is looking, a more and more able sense of what to look for, less likely to go through the same waters over and over. And just that looking itself causes the female, the sensual, to go to a higher and higher level. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's the lovers. That's all I have to say. Any questions, answers, comments, or complaints? Yeah.
I don't know if this really fits here, but when you say the male looks also towards answers,
the male, sorry?
That the male looks outward for answers, and if he could look inward and not just look for answers but internalize what he's learned.
Look with interest.
Yes. Would that be the difference between knowledge and wisdom to some extent?
I don't know. I don't know, because they're such interesting words. I've heard them both used so many ways. You know what I mean, Heather? I've heard people use wisdom in so many different ways that I'm not sure anymore what anybody means by that word. I know that in one way, one school, wisdom is used one way, and in another's teaching it's used another. So it's the terms themselves that cause me not to know, especially. But certainly when there is an identification with being right, mm-hmm. I know this card from the point of view of watching when I want someone to appreciate me. And I'm brilliant and I wait for that appreciation, because every once in a while I'm brilliant. And when I don't care whether someone appreciates me, because there is such joy in being present and naming clearly, mm-hmm. and watching and naming in the whole circumstance, inner, outer, not different, the outer and the inner male, the outer and the inner female, like in a total, and this brilliant tongue is actually the room's tongue. And we have the joy together of hearing something that wouldn't be possible without us all listening. Right? I know the difference between those two.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is more the lovers. Mm-hmm. And the first one is when the male is looking out. Mm-hmm. Does that make it clearer? You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of my life doing the first one, not having any idea of the second.
Yeah. A lot of the time we do that.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else?
I was wondering if that's somehow roots in with the wheel of interdependent origination, like how this approach with the senses
yeah.
links with with that.
Oh yeah.
Like at first it seemed, oh, it's different, but then as
there are certain overlaps, aren't there?
Along, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because it's equal shaping.
More.
The cause is changed by the effect, which is changed by the cause, which is changed by the effect.
Yeah.
There's like, and that's interdependence. It works both ways. That it isn't just going one way that way.
Okay. Yeah. My understanding of the senses on that wheel was to. The senses are on that wheel, aren't they? And then it's to.
Yeah.
The
sixth sense choice.
The feeling or the.
The
grasping, the craving after the senses are activated. No.
Oh boy.
I don't know.
That's a beautiful question. This is a beautiful question, and there is a real connection to this card.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, picking that up. But I would rather not open my mouth at this time on the wheel. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, you guys would all be asleep and I'd still be going at 11. Because the wheel is... I'm biting my tongue. it would be interesting. Shall we continue this dialogue some other time?
Yeah.
Let's do that. Maybe you could tow the Prius and we could carry on in your...
Okay. I can tow in that car.
Any other questions, answers, comments, complaints? It adequately suffice then? Gives you a little taste anyway. There's no way we could cover all. Yes, ma'am.
When you're talking about the...
You want a towel? No, sorry.
No, I'm feeling that I'm drier. I'm not just thinking. Were you talking about the desire for entertainment? Is that the need for something to happen? The wanting something to happen? Like
wanting to know what's happening, too.
Which?
Wanting to know what's happening.
Which side is that? Is that the... intellect or the
yes
creative.
Yes,
they both want something to happen all the time.
Yes. Unless they're working right, because it's only when they're interacting with each other, the three are interacting together, that there is no desire for what is not present.
So they're both off separate, looking for something to happen.
Well, isn't that what happens with your sensuality? If you don't pay attention to it, doesn't it? Don't you have little binge moments? Do you?
Yeah.
Does anybody in this room not? Liar, pants on fire. I promised my dear friend back there that I'd talk to her about her practice tonight after the class, and it's starting to get a little late. Didn't I promise you that, Miss Stanley? Yes. She's very patient. It's the only reason she came to the class was so. So can we leave it for now, and you can be in touch with me about that?
Before we go, can either you or I talk about the books I told you?
Can we do it downstairs? Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Is that... Dolores has a nice, interesting thing to do, to tell you about meeting with a lot of really good books, and I think you'd all be interested in her story. Some of you have heard it, but it's worth hearing again. Is that good? So thank you for your wonderful blessing in sharing this time with me.
Mm-hmm.
I am so grateful for your companionship on this you made me care more. I don't think anyone else has a greater gift than to be our neighbor, as Karen was saying. I think the biggest gift we give each other is to be our neighbor, to be neighbors to each other. And so I appreciate the neighborhood. See you later. I'll come and sit back there, Joe.
Would you like to take this?